You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
John Hodgman is a comedian and writer. He's well known for his appearances on The Daily Show as the resident expert, as well as for his personification of a PC in the popular Apple ads, Get a Mac. He's the author of three books, The Areas of My Expertise, More Information Than You Require, and That Is All. And he's made guest appearances on Community, Battlestar Galactica, and Bored to Death. He is the creator and performer of the Judge John Hodgman podcast and columns under that same name in the Sunday Times Magazine section. And he has a new special called Ragnarok, a Netflix original available for streaming as of today. It was filmed in the Gowanus section of Brooklyn on December 21st, 2012, the date that, according to the ancient Mayan calendar, was to be the end of the world. As it turns out, that didn't happen. And I'm very pleased because that has allowed Mr. Hodgman to join us here today, and also for the tape of the performance to survive. I'm very pleased to welcome John Hodgman back to our show.
Thank you very much. This is my one consolation for the world not ending upon the date that I predicted it would.
That you came on the show?
Yes, absolutely. It's lovely to see you again.
How much do we really know about the Mayan calendar, and how do we know it?
Well, you know, the speculation that the Mayan long count calendar was somehow indicative of an end time event had been brewing sort of in New Age circles for a number of years leading up to 2012. And sometime around 2010, 2011, 2012 became the reckoning day. And December 21st, the day that most New Age doomsayers sort of centered on as the possible end time event that they saw at the end of this 13th Baktun, which was written in the Mayan long count calendar.
It may just have been that they stopped going any further.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have a little thing that says, and then it all ends.
No. It may have been that the stone calendar factory shut down. Maybe they ran out of stone to put it on or glyphs.
Well, nobody will be around. The Spaniards are going to come. They're going
right.
to almost wipe us out.
But as I was preparing for my last book, That Is All, I turned 40, and I realized that it would be published around this time. And when you turn 40, you start, or at least I start to think about apocalypse, because that is when I start to confront my own mortality. And there's something pleasurable about apocalyptic myth, because it's not just you that's going. If you're going to go, everyone else is going to go with you.
Have you seen the calendar?
I have one in my home. I got one as a giveaway when I opened a checking account at my deranged millionaire bank. Yeah.
No, but really, have
no. I've not.
I think they're in the Anthropological Museum in Mexico City.
You seem to be under the impression that I do research when I state terrible facts like the world is going to end. All I do is merely sit down in my bath of absinthe and take my asthma inhaler 50 times and then report my visions.
But don't nerds grow up studying apocalyptic literature?
Well, certainly apocalyptic popular culture isn't an obsession of mine. I mean, I grew up watching, obviously, the Planet of the Apes, Omega Man, and then a whole vast body of young adult literature is centered on apocalypse, because I think the only other group of people who are as interested in death as older people are teenagers, because they're looking forward to our death.
And I've wondered why there's so much dystopic novels, novels about vampires and about zombies.
The zombie one is easy. I mean, they're all, like all stories, we use them as consolations for feeling out of control in life. I mean, stories do what reality can't. They provide a beginning, middle, and end. And zombie apocalypse, that's the easiest one to explain. That is clearly a wish-fulfillment fantasy that laws will disappear and we'll get to have a reason to shoot our neighbors in the head.
Now, what was your plan? Why, first of all, did you pick Gowanus to spend the last night?
Well, Travel and Leisure rated the Gowanus Canal as the number one apocalyptic waterway in the United States, so it seemed appropriate. I'm pretty sure there are monsters down there. But also the Bell House in Brooklyn is down there on 7th Street, and it's one of my favorite places to perform, so that's why I chose it.
The term Ragnarok
comes
from
Norse. I'm
going to
just gently correct your pronunciation. I don't think you read as many Thor comic books as I did.
I did read Thor.
Ragnarok is how I pronounce
it. Ragnarok?
But it is, you're absolutely right, from Norse mythology, end times.
A non-Christian apocalyptic story.
Yes. I wanted to.
So you appropriated it for the Mayan calendar?
Yeah, well, actually, when I started writing about apocalypse, I realized realized that I had been talking about Ragnarok in my comedy for a long time because I think it's a funny word. And when I decided to film this final performance of this show at the Bell House, I decided to – and release it on Netflix as it comes out today. I decided to call it Ragnarok because I figured why not pick the most difficult thing to pronounce that no one will be able to remember.
Or that Leonard Lope would screw up.
Oh, no.
Any chance that there was a miscalculation and maybe the end is still coming?
It could be today for all I know. I mean, that's the thing. We knoweth not the hour. But I am one of a great long tradition of failed doomsday prophets.
Well, you know, there's also the solipsist approach. The world did end.
Yes, exactly. And it is possible.
I'm just making all of this up.
Well, there you are. Now you're working in the Hodgmanian tradition, and I love it.
According to you, our predictions about the effects of Y2K were wrong, only in that the impact was not on computers, but instead on can openers.
Yeah, I have a whole run in my predictions about how you should stock your survival compound. Obviously, you need to raise goats and rabbits and sperm whales. You're going to need to lay in some stores of food. I suggest hoarding mayonnaise, but also urine, but no canned goods, because it turns out the Y2K bug wasn't interested in computers, just small kitchen implements.
You have a very interesting stage set at the Bell House.
That's right.
Are those objects of sentimental value or utilitarian objects designed to prolong life?
Well, a little of both. So the set at the Bell House, which you can see on the Netflix today, is sort of essentially a survival bunker. And I have some of my favorite things there. I have my stores of Hodgman brand survival mayonnaise. I have a bottle of Plymouth gin. That's just something I want to have with me at all times. I have my favorite item, which is a mounted ferret skeleton from Skulls Unlimited in Oklahoma City. And, of course, a portrait of H.P. Lovecraft, whose dark dreams of and apocalyptic visions are very influential to me.
Which category does the ferret skeleton fall under?
Oh, something I want to see again before I die, I think.
Now, most survivalists also bring along weapons.
Yes. I brought along a baseball bat because you don't need to reload it, and I hear it is useful. But I am not skilled. I'm not an apocalyptic fighter. I'm an apocalyptic lover.
You sent a kid out of the Bell House into the street as a kind of a human sacrifice.
More of a canary in a coal mine. There was a 14-year-old in the audience, a very lovely young British man named Joel Ronson, and I sent him out onto the streets of Gowanus to watch for any dark tidings and then come in and warn us.
You sent him out without his coat.
Yeah, I thought it was appropriate that he should be cold and shivering for camera.
Now, you also toured the country with this message for a year, and then you selected Brooklyn for your final performance.
Yeah, so, you know, I started performing material about the apocalypse and also sports and wine and wealth.
Well, you didn't bring any bottled water up, did you? I didn't see any bottled water.
No, just powdered water. It keeps longer. That's a Stephen Wright joke I have to give. You remember Stephen Wright's joke, I bought some powdered water, but I didn't know what to add. Oh, what a genius and a great influence on me, as much as H.P. Lovecraft, I'd say. But yes, no, when I had my visions, I took them to the road and tried to warn people on how to prepare themselves for the collapse, say, of the United States dollar and the rise of the only valuable currency, the beef jerky dollar, and warn them about the dog storm and the omega pulse and the blood wave. No one believed me, of course. And by the end of the year, I realized I had a one-man show that was such an imitation of stand-up comedy that it could only be called stand-up comedy. And so I mainly recorded it for posterity at the Bell House because I was proud of it and I wanted to shoot it into space for the alien races that would want to study us later.
You have a boom box. Isn't that one of the objects we hope will be destroyed?
Oh, no,
they're
making a big comeback after the apocalypse. Boom boxes and also fondue pots and bread machines.
You say that we'll have to raise our own food. What kinds of food?
Well, you won't be able to raise crops after the apocalypse because the soil will be poisoned for 1,000 years.
Although Brooklyn might be the ideal place to try because of all the small plot farming that we've seen in recent years.
There is that, and there is an overrun in Brooklyn of chickens. All of the urban chicken keepers I know are now complaining to me in Park Slope because they're too terrified to kill their chickens after they stop laying eggs. So I think now we already have obviously a rat infestation in Brooklyn. I've seen raccoons wander into my own yard, and now I think chickens are going to be the next big plague.
Well, you have
forget brood two of the cicadas, chickens in Brooklyn.
I haven't seen any cicadas.
I haven't either. I think they're in New Jersey. My friends in New Jersey say them all the time, but I don't.
I think they're afraid to come into Brooklyn.
I don't think they can afford it.
Is the bat on stage there for any reason to protect you?
Well, you know, I talk about sports a lot, which, you know, I'm not an avid sportsman.
But you say you've studied them as a survival mechanism.
Well, exactly so, because the thing is, I am a nerd, but nerds are creatures of civilization. We rely on society and rules that jocks enforce in order to live. And when that disappears, I'm going to need to know a little bit about bases ball and two baskets ball in order to talk down the roving cannibal lacrosse gangs that are going to come to my house and try to roast me over my first editions of McSweeney's.
Well, you shouldn't taunt them by correcting their grammar, particularly as it involves the naming of their respective sports.
Don't worry. They have no grammar. They don't understand what I'm saying.
Well, it seems to me jocks are better prepared than nerds to survive, if only because they're used to working in teams.
Oh, without question. I mean, I've often gone on record and spoken before the president of these United States about jocks versus nerds as the culture war of our time. But I have tremendous respect for jocks because they get things done. They go on gut instinct. Like, the jock philosophy is you go on gut instinct, you organize into teams. An authority figure tells you what to do, and you accomplish it. And without that, we wouldn't have civilization. Also, I don't want to be wedgied by them, so please don't hurt me, jocks.
Do you think that your audience came together partly under the assumption that there's safety in numbers?
I don't think a single one of them believed that the world was going to end. The only one, I think, who actually managed to be convinced was me. I sort of convinced myself.
Well, there are these, every so often, there are these ministers who declare that the world's going to end on a certain day because of reading the Bible, not the Mayan calendar.
The Harold Camp thing is the famous one. Who predicted Revelation in 2011. He actually predicted it four times over four different years. But my favorite is William Miller, who in 1844, the Millerites imagined on October 22nd that Jesus was going to come down and they were going to ascend to heaven. And when it didn't happen, historians gave it the greatest name of all time, the Great Disappointment.
You're the resident expert on The Daily Show. How do you get a job like that?
Well, you know, I wrote my first book of fake facts, The Areas of My Expertise, and was promoting it in an interview context much like this one. And I went on The Daily Show as a guest, and we had such a good time that I was invited to be on the show. So I expect I'm going to get a job here now, right?
You were promoting your first book there.
That's correct.
You're not promoting a book here, so we have to wait until you promote a book, and then maybe we'll invite you. But you've said that appearance, the first one, you owe to Jake Gyllenhaal?
Oh, I had heard that from time to time. The rumor was that he canceled at the last minute, and then I was therefore asked to come in to fill in because they had an empty spot. And that's never been quite confirmed, but I did. He was a guest later on the show, and I got to meet him. He was really nice, and I said thank you for my new life on television.
Now, I have a bit of a bone to pick with you. Didn't you say that a penny dropped from the top of the Empire State Building, in fact, would not injure anyone on the ground? Of course it would. It would go, the further it goes down, it would be more like a bullet.
No, I know. It feels very counterintuitive, and this is a long urban legend that if you drop a penny from the top of the Empire State Building, it'll pierce someone's skull. But in fact, the updraft, you know, there is atmosphere in the world, and a penny is not being dropped in a vacuum. It is being dropped through the atmosphere, and the updraft from the ground actually freezes the penny in midair. So there are thousands of pennies floating about halfway down from the Empire State Building because people are constantly tossing pennies off trying to kill people. I don't know why New Yorkers are so murderous, or maybe it's tourists.
Now, you have so many different things that you do.
I know.
What do people generally recognize you for? The Mac commercials or The Daily Show now?
This hideous mustache that I have on. Mostly that's what people talk about.
You could shave it.
It is no, I'm afraid to do it. I'm afraid it's like an alien face hugger from the Alien movies. If I try to shave it, it'll spit out acid. It's taken over my life. It's the only thing people see. But you read that resume, and it's like, you know, there was a long time when I worried that I wouldn't have anything to put on my resume. But now you see just what a peripatetic personality I am. I love to do different things.
And you got a new lease on life when the world didn't end on December 21st.
I know, but that was almost more terrifying than the world ending because in many ways the Ragnarok special on Netflix represents the end of this creative endeavor that I had started 7 years before, and I didn't know what I was going to do the next day.
So what happens? It's released on Netflix, and then
that's right.
Members of Netflix can access it anytime they want?
Yeah. If you subscribe to Netflix, it's free with your subscription, obviously, and if you want to subscribe, by all means do.
And it's called Ragnarok?
John Hodgman colon Ragnarok. It's the punctuation mark colon, not don't spell out colon. That's something different.
And the next book is the one in the works?
I don't know that there will be a next book.
Oh, maybe
I mean, truly,
you won't be invited
to
be on the show then.
I created this fake universe through my three books, and then I literally destroyed it with this special. And it's terrifying, but I'm coming to believe that the fact that the world didn't end isn't the end of the world.
Well, I'm going to be taking some time off. I'm inviting you right now to be a fill-in guest host.
Oh, I would be delighted. Oh, my goodness. Even if you were not putting me on the spot on the air, I would say yes. Thank you very much.
Well, if it doesn't happen, nobody will remember. And
where are you going?
Oh, different places.
Okay. Yeah. No, I understand. You want to protect your privacy.
John, thank you so much for being on our show
again. It's my pleasure. I look forward to broadcasting your show from outside your hotel room.